Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ray and Kay Today, talking sports with friends.
Ray and Kay Today,
sports radio on the dial. Check us out, we'll make you smile. And they spit it, don't play. And we're talking nothing but the NFL and NBA, MLB, college football.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and thank you for joining us on this NFL Monday. Give us a call. Let's talk some sports. 718-664-9098. Like always, hit us up. Tweet us, Facebook us, email us at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. What you think about these five jobs that are open. Who would you hire? And like always, check out rayandtaytoday.com with back shows and a lot of sports information. Ray, they call it Black Monday. We're never happy about, you know, what this happens for jobs and guys and families. Four guys fired, two GMs, five jobs opened. But I ask you, and I also think it should be called Pink Monday, not Black Monday, because we got Black Friday. So, you know, the black is the positive and success. So it should be Pink Monday. What are your thoughts overall? No shocks, no surprises. Where do they go from here?
So really no surprises. We're still waiting on Oakland to see if Tony Sparano gets fired. I think he will. He had that interim tag, but I don't think he'll be given the full-time position.
Yeah, I think
so
it's open.
I
think it's already open. So
there may be six, but confirmed, just so the listeners know, confirmed in Chicago, the GM and the head coach are out. In Atlanta, the head coach is out. Mike Smith is out. In New York, the GM and the head coach, so Rex Ryan and John Idzik, are out. And in San Francisco, who did I miss? Chicago, Atlanta, the Jets, and the Niners, of course, is, you know, by choice, they parted ways. Jim Harbaugh. And he is probably, Harbaugh, in the next few days, going to be announced as the next head coach in college football.
Well, Michigan has the press conference. They have the press conference tomorrow, at 12 or 2 p.m. Right. They have a press conference.
They're probably going to make him the highest paid coach in pro football. But if you look at these teams, you know, the Jets are 4-12. The Falcons also very disappointed. What they win? Five games. And
Falcons won like seven.
But they lost the last game, right? So they were 6-10, I think.
Yeah.
7-9 could have won the division. 7-8-1 won the division. And Chicago, you know, when you score eight fewer points this year than you did last year, and you're the offensive guru. So Phil Emery was there for 3 years, and Mark Trestman was there for 2 years. But, you know, you regress, and especially on the offensive side of the ball, none of these can be a shock. What's interesting, though, is there are four or five really interesting franchises, too. You know, the Jets are a mess, but the Niners, whoever gets the Niners job, wow. And whoever gets Atlanta and Chicago, you know,
I think Oakland's a good job, too, though. I think Oakland's a good job, and there's still rumors that last minute they were trying to offer Jim Harbaugh the front door, the back door, and the kitchen sink. Although, you know, it's pretty much a done deal that he's at Michigan. You never know because, you know, even when he took the Niners job, he was entertaining other stuff to the last minute. But I'll say this. If you had to put those five jobs in any order, like you always say, Ray, because of location, the Niners job would not be number one. I think you look at the quarterback and you got to like Atlanta. They do need to fix the offensive defensive line. But I like the Raiders' job pretty high up there, too, because I think that they've got a quarterback and some young talent. I'd be concerned about the Bears and the Jets. The Niners, they have talent, but I would have to put them second or third, not number one, just because of expectations. And could the next guy, is he going to come in there and get to three out of four NFC championships and a Super Bowl?
So you're trying to say you want to be the guy after the guy in San Francisco.
I think there's a lot of pressure in San Francisco. Granted, this year they were better than their record because we all know, let's be honest, ton of injuries, ton of issues. So I think to judge them off of this year is not fair. They're more like an 11-5 team. But you've got to, you know, figure out Justin Smith just retired today. So you're losing some of the defensive line. You got to get healthy. Ray McDonald's gone. So you just lost two defensive linemen. And, you know, you've got to figure out, are you signing Crabtree? Does Gore come back? You've got a lot of static there. Do you really have speed at the receiver, you know, to get wide open for Kaepernick for these guys? So I think the Niners are in some sort of flux, to be honest.
Maybe, but I'd rather have the tools that the Niners have, because if you think about it, in Atlanta, you've got great talent on one side of the ball. In Chicago, same thing, talent on one side of the ball. The Jets are just a mess. So I'd rather start with talent on both sides of the ball and then work it from there. The Raiders, to me, are just a mess. It's a black hole. Until they get stabilized, I wouldn't even, you know, obviously there's only 32 jobs, so if you get offered the Raiders job, you take it. But I still think the Niners job is the best of all these jobs.
Oh, definitely. Well, you know what's interesting is that they're figuring out if Reggie McKenzie, the GM, if he's going to stay on. They're basically, the owner, Mark Davis, Al Davis's son, made it seem as if he's going to, you know, let McKenzie be a part of hiring the next head coach, but he might not be the GM. I don't know. I agree with you in the sense about the Niners. I just think, you know, you'd like to have a quarterback. Two other jobs that could come available. You know, Ray, you got a lot of static. You might need to hit us back on that Selly. But two jobs still could come available because you never know because of ownership. The Buffalo Bills, because they have new owners. You never know. Doug Marrone did a good job. They got the win yesterday over the Patriots. You know, had a decent record. Kyle Orton retires. So that's kind of interesting. And then the Redskins. Everything seems okay. But, you know, there have been a lot of one-and-dones. So there's always a shot that Jay Gruden could be, you know, let go. So you don't know. You know. You there, Ray?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Trying to get some technical difficulties solved.
Yeah, so I mean it's a chance. Okay, you're echoing there. Are you in?
Yeah. I'm fine. Yeah, here we go. How's that?
There we go.
All right. A little technical difficulty.
So
you're
yeah.
right though. Buffalo potentially, then they look like they've got a real, real solid defense. So
the defense is lovely.
Yeah, and then you figure if those running backs can, they're getting old, Freddie Jackson's getting old, and CJ Spiller can't stay healthy, but Sammy Watkins, if they can get Robert Woods, their offense is not that easy. So that Buffalo job's not bad. And the other, I guess the other downside of the San Francisco job is the neighborhood you play in, right? Arizona looks like they're solid for the next few years. And they have to figure out the Carson Palmer issue long term. But the Rams and the Seahawks don't know where they're going anywhere. So that's going to be a tough neighborhood to play in every year. Whereas the Bills, you know, hey, you got Miami, the Jets, eventually Tom Brady's going to retire. So the Bills job is pretty exciting. I'd be interested in that Bills job. Let's go. Put my name in a hat. What's it take?
Hey, listen. Well, so what'd you think about, you know, Geno Smith having his best game pretty much ever to get Rex Ryan the victory the last game of the season? I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, they went out strong for their coach. I got to say that.
Look, I've always said that Rex is a player's coach, and Rex is a fun guy to play for, and you want Rex on your team. Now, the problem is the result. The decision-making and the offense has always been behind the defense. So you can't go 4-12 and expect to, in your seventh year or so, I only made the playoffs three years or so, and 2 years you went to the AFC Championship, so you got to give him credit for that. But, you know, I said to you a while ago that Rex is going to go, Isaac's going to go. it's just funny that on his last game, probably both of their last games for the foreseeable future as NFL head coach and NFL starting quarterback, they go out with a victory. On the road, looking good.
Yeah, no, definitely. So we got to, you know, obviously Friday show, we'll predict the playoffs, but we got to set the table. Some interesting business. So I mentioned Smith, Justin Smith retired, Kyle Orton retired, but your boy, who sort of lost his mind in Green Bay, stepping on the quarterback, the first step looked like an accident, but the second step looked like it was kind of purposeful. And Ndamukong Suh will be suspended for the wild card game, and we got to just sort of set up the schedule for the folks. When you look at the NFC, obviously the, you know, 1 and 2 seeds are Seattle and Green Bay. On Saturday, you know, you basically have got the Arizona Cardinals, who started off 9-1, finish up as a wild card going to the Carolina Panthers in that 4-5 matchup.
Which both those teams are lucky to play each other because one of them's going to win, and neither of them should be has any place in the second round of the playoffs.
No, and you're right, and probably that game, you would believe that, you know, depending on who wins, they'll be going to, the 4-5, they'll probably go to Green Bay, depending if the 6 seed wins, if Detroit wins. So then in the second game in the NFC on Sunday, you got the Lions at your Dallas Cowboys hosting a playoff game, ladies and gentlemen.
How about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys? They played some good football yesterday. You know, Washington's a mess. I got to tell you, Ray, Romo, Dez Bryant, and DeMarco Murray, they just need to be applauded because, yes, the offensive line is great. Yes, the defense has stepped up. But at the end of the day, you still need your playmakers to be consistent and show up every week and make plays. And those three gentlemen surely did that this season for the Dallas Cowboys. Hashtag pay that man Dez Bryant. And I would probably say you're going to have to pay DeMarco Murray, but that's okay. That's all right, you know?
And you know what? I was looking at the stats, and you know, we have our researcher, Adam, so that's some stats pulling for us as well. But if you look real closely, Tony Romo didn't have gaudy stats. Like this, Drew Brees almost threw for 5,000 again, but Romo threw for, 3,700 yards. But his numbers and what he did for the Cowboys, you need to throw him in the race for MVP. He won't win it because Aaron Rodgers had slightly better numbers. And even, you know, quiet as kept. We'll talk about dark horse. I don't know if you could ever call him a dark horse, but Tom Brady, who – after 4 games, people were releasing him in some fantasy leagues, even in our league.
Yeah.
It was fantastic, and he needs to get some MVP votes. But back to Romo, though, you know, everybody's killing Romo when he's bad, but when he's good, it seems like nobody's giving him the accolades. Tony Romo had an excellent, excellent season.
You know, I think you're totally right, and it's so funny because I think 2 guys from Dallas and 2 or 3 guys from Pittsburgh could be in that conversation. Because when you look at, you know, just passing yards, tied for number 1 for the season, 49-52 tied, Drew Brees and Big Ben for number 1 in the NFL. They beat out Andrew Luck for 3rd. That's pretty impressive for Big Ben. That's an all-time Steeler record. I mean, a Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback almost throwing for 5,000 yards. And he would have threw for more last night if, you know, if they needed to. You know, they just sort of, you know, ran it down and won 27-17 over the Bengals to get that AFC North. And you got 3 teams coming in from there. But you're right, Romo and Murray. I actually think, to me, I'd give the MVP to Murray because I think what he did was stabilize the franchise and took a team that basically last year was, you know, last or second to last in time of possession to basically a team in second place in time of possession and wound up with 1,845 yards rushing and was a great receiver. So he did a yeoman's job. Le'Veon Bell came in 2nd in running and was really good. But those guys, man, and Antonio Brown, I mean, can we just applaud our man Antonio Brown from the Pittsburgh Steelers leading the league in receptions, Ray, and in receiving yards, 1,698, and what did he wind up with receptions? 130, something crazy.
That's such a boy. And you know, in a balanced offense, too. It wasn't like this was the Dan Marino 85 Dolphins where they were just throwing the ball, because Le'Veon Bell had a great year, as did Antonio, as did Roethlisberger. So kudos to the offensive unit that you guys have assembled there. So your man Todd Haley, you know, leaving behind a little legacy there.
No,
What's going on? He
did a good job, man. He definitely did a good job. So
speaking of Le'Veon Bell, though, let's get back to that. What are your Pittsburgh sources telling you about his status for the game on Saturday?
Well, you know, listen, everybody's been saying, from Marshall Faulk to, you know, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and Ed Boucher, famous Steeler guy, Burt Lancaster. Basically, you know, they're going to have to see how it progresses through the week. There's no serious damage, but I bet it's going to wind up being a game-time decision. It's unfortunate because the Steelers are really going to need him, and I think he's going to play, but he's not going to be at 100%. You know, you hyperextend that knee, that, you know, they got to check to see if there's any tears or anything in there. You know, it's a painful injury. Marshall Faulk, you know, talked about it on the show last night on NFL Network. But I'll tell you this, the kid from Wake Forest, Harrison, they called back that run, but he looked pretty good. And then Dree Archer will have to step up, even though he's small. But I think Bell, and I think what our caller Michael said is so true. Look at when, you know, McCann and the other guys and Blake played in the secondary, and you didn't have Ike Taylor and Troy last night, and they actually played really well. So they're younger legs, they're faster, and Ray, you know, them young legs, man, that's what the game's about. Ike Taylor and Troy, I love them. They're legends. But those old legs, they get burnt in the secondary. So let's keep it real.
Well, especially, you know, especially in week 18 of the NFL season, right? It takes its toll.
So let's set up the AFC. Obviously, on Saturday, you have the rematch, you know, the third battle, and they split the first two. The Baltimore Ravens, who we'll talk about that, kind of, you know, squeaked in. The Chargers just blew it, Ray. You picked KC. You were right about that. Chargers had their opportunities. They blew it. And we salute Justin Houston, who almost got the sack record. That was pretty impressive to see. What did he wind up? He wound up pulling down 22 sacks. So he was just a half a sack away. J.J. Watt, 2 years in a row, over 20 sacks. He had 20 and a half. And the Texans, they also won. But you know what? Baltimore, they did it. They won. They came back against Connor Shaw and the Cleveland Browns. So they make the playoffs to face the Steelers. And then on Saturday and on Sunday, this is going to be interesting because the Bengals are going to the Colts. I would not say – can't say that either team's really that super healthy in terms of their receivers a little banged up, and T.Y. Hilton and A.J. Green – A.J. Green, even if he plays, Ray, with that bicep, he wasn't looking good. Now the concussion, so he's going to be a, you know, game-time decision probably in a short week. And it'll be fascinating to see, can Andrew Luck give you some sort of balance, or you get Boom Herring to give you some sort of running game against the Bengals, who have the running game, but then do they have any passing? Gresham a little banged up too, and Sanu sort of disappearing in the Bengals at the Colts, you know?
But I tell you what, Jeremy Hill has just emerged, and, you know, Giovanni Bernard was too small, and then Jarvis Leal, they had high expectations for him, but this kid Hill out of LSU has turned out to be exactly what they needed. So you just hope for, if you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and we got some fans in Ohio, that they can all show up healthy, because this is right where you need them to put it together. This is Andy Dalton's resurrection year, but it may not happen. We'll make our predictions on Friday, but I tell you what, Hill really gives them a chance, especially against a Colts team that's flawed. They can't run the ball. So it all depends on Andrew Luck. So much is riding on his shoulders on offense.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure to put on Luck. And as of late, the Colts defense, you know, they haven't been really stepping up. Oh, and we got to mention for the Ravens, a big help, your boy Oloti Nata is coming back, Ray. So, you know,
so Eddie Mike, so he's back on the weekend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's eligible for the playoffs. So Nada will be back. That's huge.
Back, right? You missed four games. Are you back? You know, not granted a defensive tackle doesn't need to run around like a quarterback.
Oh,
but
yeah. You know Nada's going to be playing, don't you? You don't have to worry about that. I mean, that's I have to worry about it as a Steeler fan.
I hear you.
That's who has to worry about it. But, you know, I think overall what we saw yesterday was what in the last 2 weeks, exactly what the NFL wants. It was great. And the playoff race, just competitive games, you know, everything that you could ask for. It was a good, you know, a good weekend and a good last, you know, 2 weeks of, you know, a great NFL season. One thing that I guess when you think about something for hope for teams that didn't make the playoffs, give me two teams that didn't make it, maybe were close, that you think that, you know, they really showed signs that of improving for next season.
So if there were teams that I was super impressed with, and I said one of them before, and that's the Buffalo Bills. I mean, this team, to me, especially when you can play D and you can stop people in an era that is so offensive-oriented, I'm a big fan of what Doug Marone is doing over there in Buffalo. And, again, you know, do they overtake the Patriots? Maybe not. But they were 9-7, you know, quiet as kept. A win or two away from the playoffs. I mean, 10-6 made the playoffs in the AFC, right? Baltimore's 10-6. So, you know, they're right there knocking on the corner. I love what they did. Obviously, Kansas
who's the quarterback? That's the question. Orton retires. You don't believe in EJ Manuel. Do they go back into the draft? They're not going
to
have an early pick. They're going
to
be in the team. You know,
they have to, and you're right, and that's the biggest question mark. Well, the aging running backs, fragile running backs on the quarterback.
Maybe they sign Brian Hoyer, right?
Well, Brian Hoyer might be exactly what this team needs to get to the playoffs. I'm not sure you win a Super Bowl with Brian Hoyer, but you can certainly get to the playoffs and maybe try to groom a quarterback. I mean, maybe it's a double-pronged strategy, right? You draft somebody,
as you said
from the beginning, you know, EJ Manning is not that guy.
No.
And maybe you get Brian Hoyer and somebody else. So you're right, though, that there is that big question mark. But I still love that team, and I'd love to be the coach of that team. I don't want to take Doug Marone's job, but I'd love to be coach.
All right. Wait, before you get to your second team, let me ask you this. Let me tell you this. Before you get to your second team, of course, you know, it's sort of like a pod scheduling thing. So the NFL announced their opponents. So you talk about best divisions. You know, last year it was clearly the NFC West, and this year it's back to the AFC North. Well, next year, you know, 4 years have come around. I went to the Steeler-Cardinal game 4 years ago or 3 years ago, you know, out here in Arizona. Well, they'll play each other next year. But the Buffalo Bills, the AFC East, plays the NFC East. So we will see the Bills go up against, you know, the Giants and the Cowboys, two of their Super Bowl foes. So it'll be interesting to see their, you know, their schedule. They're playing the Bengals and, you know, different teams like that, the Colts. So always a factor, right, knowing, you know, who you play against and, you know, seeing how tough that schedule is. So who would be your second team that you think is kind of up and coming on the rise for the next season?
So – I'll give you the thing that I give them the thumbs up is Houston, but that's not because, you know, we dapped them up in the middle of the season because we said good job for them turning it around from 2-2. But the team that I was impressed with, I'll give you the team that I was impressed with, the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
They ended the season 7-9, right? In a division where we thought Chicago, Detroit, and Green Bay might all make the playoffs. And Green Bay was 12-4. Detroit was 11-5. Now, Chicago underachieved, obviously, 5-11. But the Minnesota Vikings, without Adrian Peterson, and with his controversy, right? It's not like he blew out an ACL. He was suspended, and they didn't get much out of him. And his backups weren't even that good. You know, Matt Asiata was okay, and McKinnon was okay, and Ben Tate was okay. But
that's your man, Asiata, yo.
Yeah, Matt Asiata, he had a couple games, three touchdowns, but over a long, you know, over a 14-game season, you know, replacing Peterson, it wasn't all that. But to be 7-9 in a fairly tough division in an NFC that has some tough competition, I was very impressed. You were higher on Teddy Bridgewater than I was coming out of college. But you know what? They may have something there, and, you know, they have an emergency. Well, to put it this way, last year you thought that they had a couple wide receivers emerge, but they took a step back. Cordero Patterson took a step back. But now they have other receivers stepping up. You know what? They just put it together. And it's like that spirit of winning, and it looks like they're gonna be just fine when they move into that new stadium with or without Adrian Peterson. Obviously, you want to see Adrian Peterson back in the league and producing and entertaining the fans, but very impressed with the 7-9 Minnesota team. I had a mess. We got to check what the preview was. With Adrian Peterson, I had a mess by, 4-12, 5-11, something like that.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty fascinating, and I think Teddy B. Water, you know, Teddy B. H2O is, I think he showed a lot of poise, and I think he's the right guy. The three guys, I like Carr, Bortles, and Teddy Bridgewater. And just real quick, you know, real interesting thing to talk about with the NFL. So Tampa Bay gets the number one pick. You've got the Tennessee Titans at 2. Jaguars at 3, Raiders 4, Redskins 5. You have the New York Jets all the way down to 6, and they need a quarterback. The Bears 7, Falcons 8, number 9 is the New York Giants, and the Rams at 10. When you think about that top 10, and obviously Minnesota's right there at 11, but, you know, there's only really two quarterbacks. The question is, does Tampa at 1 take Mariota or Winston? And then Tennessee, they're saying that they're going to ride with Zach Mettenberger. So if you looked at that in Jacksonville and then the Raiders, if Washington right there at 5, if they want to roll with RG3, the Jets still could have a shot at Mariota at 6 if nobody trades up. But you got to believe somebody would trade up, don't you think?
Well, A, I think they're going to trade up. B, I don't think, you know what, I don't think Mariota's going to go that high. I have a feeling that even though he won the Heisman, people are going to pick him apart, and they're going to say that he played in kind of a gimmick offensive system.
Oh, he did. He's not NFL ready, but he's got the talent. I mean, listen, if the Jets got him at 6, wouldn't you be happy if the Jets got him at 6? That would be a miracle.
Well, the Jets need a quarterback, right? So anybody's better than what the Jets have now. And, remember Mark Sanchez was drafted 6, and we were frustrated that the Jets traded up with Cleveland to get him and overreached for him. But you know what? You got to do it. You got to spend your first-round pick if you're the Jets on a quarterback. You have to. Your new GM is going to definitely do that. But the problem is everybody knows that. So if you feel like there's a top-10 quarterback out there, people may trade ahead of you to go get him.
I already told you, Chip Kelly, I bet you he trades the house with the Tennessee Titans, and they can build up their team more if they believe in their quarterback, get a couple of, you know, maybe get Shady McCoy for Bishop Sankey, you know, get a couple of, you know, second-rounders and some other players, and then go ahead and get the number 2 pick and get Mariota. Don't sleep on Chip Kelly doing it.
I don't think Mariota goes number 2. I think he goes later in the first round. But you know what? If that happens, I'll take Nick Foles as the Jets quarterback in a minute.
Ooh. You like Nick Foles. You do.
Better than anybody the Jets have now and better than anybody potentially coming out of the draft for the first 2 or 3 years. I don't think that Mariota has totally revamped his game. And even Jameis Winston, I don't think he's ready for the NFL week 1 or week 2. I think he's a 2-3 year project. Obviously he's got a lot of the intangibles, got like the Tim Tebow intangibles, and he's got, you know, better football skills. But I'm not sure you plug Jameis Winston in and he immediately succeeds. So I'll take Nick Foles over any of those guys right now.
Yeah, see, I think Winston is special. And what he has is a little bit of Cam Newton, a little bit of Big Ben. He's not athletic like that. You know, he can do a little bit. He can do enough. But his type of poise and just he's a winner. Oh, man. I think big things are ahead for that kid as long as he gets in the right organization. And I think Lovie Smith would be good for him. I bet you I think Winston's going to go number one in Tampa. You know, we'll see. So now with the NFL playoffs, we're going to, you know, pick it all next week or whatever. Just real quick, how damaging is it for them, for the Lions, to lose Ndamukong Suh?
I think they lose the game. Nick Fairley's out, and Ndamukong Suh is out. So you take two of the four defensive linemen that are the strength of your team, and no wonder they're a 7.5-point underdog in Dallas. Otherwise, it'd be a 3-point game, and they could win. Dallas has not been gangbusters at home, ironically enough. They've been playing great on the road. So I think that without Ndamukong Suh, and the one thing that you know also is that Tony Romo's not 100% healthy, right, with that back and you know, all the injuries that he's been carrying. So pressure up the middle, pressure on the quarterback could really disrupt the Cowboys' offense. And between Fairley and Suh being out, I got to like the Cowboys. I already gave you my prediction.
We'll get to it. So before we get to these college games, and obviously Texas A&M won for the SEC, gone final 45-37 in their bowl game. And, you know, the West Virginia quarterback, he had to end his career, so he didn't get to play. You know, thought that was kind of sad with all the concussions. And bless you. And Clemson is up on Oklahoma 20-0. But I just want to throw this around real quick. We're wrapping up Monday in the NFL, Black Monday. Friday we'll talk playoffs. But I'm interested in these coaches that were let go. You know, Harbaugh's probably going to Michigan. We'll, you know, forget about the Raiders coach. I don't think he'll be a head coach. But Tressman, Rex Ryan, Mike Smith, are any of them going to be a head coach next season? Would they, you know, go to another team, you think? Because there's a lot of rumors that, you know, Atlanta is interested already in Dan Quinn and Todd Bowles, same with the Niners. But they were saying that Rex Ryan could get an interview in Atlanta, possibly Chicago.
I don't think so. I think the three of them have to sit it out a year because they all made their bones on one side of the ball. And you know, it's funny, Mike Smith is the most interesting one because he made his bones on the defensive side, and yet he had a couple of 12-4 seasons, 13-3 seasons too, but couldn't get over the hump in the playoffs. So I think Mike Smith gets a shot before Rex Ryan, and Rex Ryan probably gets a shot next. I don't think Mark Trestman is a head coach in the NFL. I think he'll get an offensive coordinator's job, but I don't think he'll be a head coach.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever be a head coach again. I don't think he showed that leadership, the demeanor. I don't think, you know, as a player, there's nothing about him that, you know, obviously it's on the outside.
Everybody likes him, though. The thing is,
he's a
really likable guy.
They do like him. They do like him, but they didn't play for him. They did not play for him. So let's go to college football. Before we go forward, obviously, you know, we got the big games and we'll start with the playoff, but couple games over the weekend. That ASU-Duke game, Ray, that was something else. You know, 36-31, I was really I was impressed with ASU. Duke, you know, they've gotten to a couple bowl games. They have not won one in the last couple years, and their senior class, you know, they went on. But ASU is, a top 15 program and will be maybe finish off maybe even the top 10 in the rankings, and they're setting themselves up nice for a big recruiting class and to be, you know, potential favorites, them and USC, for next year in the Pac-12 and stuff. So I thought that was kind of interesting. What'd you think about USC's big win over Nebraska? That was a great game.
Yeah, it was. I predicted it. I thought USC would do big things. I think Sarkisian's turning that program around. They're getting out of the mess that they were in the last 5 or 6 years, you know, like Carroll and Lane Kiffin and so forth. So good for them. I think they get to get into a really competitive Pac-12 situation next year. But, you know, Texas A&M today, Clemson today, look like, all right, these guys are ready for next year. You know, it's funny because the bowl games are a little bit of a recap of this year, but a little bit of a preview, you know, into next college.
No, definitely, definitely. So we'll work our way backwards. Let's start off with the semifinal. Obviously, you know, tonight is Arkansas, Texas. That should be kind of fun. That's like a toss-up to me. I'd probably go with Arkansas. I think Texas might have something up their sleeve. But I like the way Arkansas has been playing. So I would take Arkansas to beat the Longhorns in that game.
Yeah, I like that too. I like Arkansas in that game.
So let's go to the semifinal, man. This is really what it's all about. And then we'll hit some of these other, you know, big games. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, yada, yada, yada. But let's start with the early game. 5 o'clock Eastern out in Pasadena, California. You got number 2 against number 3, Oregon against Florida State. I'm going to let you talk about it first. What's your feeling on this classic Heisman battle?
Classic Heisman. Last year's Heisman in James Winston. This year's Heisman in Marcus Mariota. And I think this is going to be a contrasting style. Florida State has been in about 4 or 5 close games that any other team with a mere mortal would have lost. But Jameis Winston, Jimbo Fisher, this team gets a lot of credit for winning really, really close games. And I think, though, that they're fighting a fire. And ultimately, this Oregon Ducks team. Now, granted, we said this a couple years ago. Remember when they lost to Cam Newton in the finals against Oregon? That they are a tough, tough matchup. And we saw week one, Michigan State had all the time in the world to prepare for them, and they couldn't do it. So I think Oregon takes care of business. And they beat a Florida State team that's been fighting with fire and maybe isn't as good as an undefeated team should be. You know what I mean? So I think Marcus Mariota doesn't have a 400-yard game, but he has a 300-yard game. He throws for a few touchdowns. I think they're able to run the ball. I think that Royce Freeman and Mariota do some big things on the ground. I believe that they can put up 31 points even against this Florida State team. And the Florida State, and the engine that could, runs out of gas a little bit and lose 31-27. So pretty high-scoring game.
What do you say, 31-27?
31-27. What are we calling it, semifinal number one?
Yeah, the first semifinal out in the Rose Bowl. Whew, okay, 13-0 Florida State against 12-1 Oregon Ducks. You know, for me, when I look at this one, I'm blown away by Mariota's stats. You know, 3,700 yards passing and 38 touchdowns. And then you look over at Winston and you're like, wait a minute. His stats aren't that bad, and he's got a lot of guys playing on Sundays in the NFL with 3,500 passing yards, 24 touchdowns. You know, he had a lot of interceptions this year. But I think Dalvin Cook has developed. I do think that Green, sneakily, Rashard Green could be the best, you know, maybe the best player on the field. And, you know, you do like Freeman and Marshall, some of their speedsters over there for the Ducks. For some strange reason, as much as I love Mariota and Oregon, I think that we're underestimating some of the secondary and some of the players on this Florida State team. I think that they've gotten the offensive line together. Remember, their tackle went over to center, and now he might be, like, you know, one of the first centers picked in the second or third round in the draft. And I got a funny feeling, man, that all that stuff with the hearing and the this and that, this is Winston's last game, too. And you know what? He's going to be playing free with all that stuff off of him. And he knows that he's playing to out-duel Mariota for the number one pick. And I think Jimbo Fisher is underrated as a head coach. They've got leaders and leadership and veterans. And I think Florida State pulls the mini upset. Don't know what the spread is. I'm sure Oregon's favored probably by, what, like 6 points or something? You know, I'm sure it's something. I didn't check out the spreads on this. But I'm going to take Florida State in a, maybe a surpriser. 34-31, the Seminoles take out Oregon Ducks. And the Florida State Seminoles, baby, get themselves to go from Pasadena to the national championship down at AT&T Stadium.
All right, so we got a difference right there on Jump Street. All right, I like that.
Yeah, man. So go ahead. What you got in that Sugar Bowl?
Oh, my goodness. So here's the thing. You've got Urban Meyer going up against Nick Saban. If you gave either of these coaches a month to prepare, you would definitely take them. Now, the problem is they're playing each other. So now you got to say, all right, so the prep time and the genius coaching, that kind of offsets itself, right, because they all had the same time to prepare for each other. They both played in the, you know, the SEC championship and the Big Ten championship. So, all right, so now you go back to, can you really believe that Cardell Jones, the third string quarterback?
Cardell.
Now, J.T. Barrett was the second string quarterback and a freshman. And this kid, Cardell, is a sophomore, second string quarterback. Can a second string quarterback, even with, you know, some of the talent that they have on offense, and not granted, the receivers aren't that great. There are a bunch of receivers that do work. I think it's like three or four of them that he has, right? Devin Smith and Michael Thomas. But ultimately, you know, he's going to run out Elliott in the running game. He's going to run it himself. But can you really believe? Forget about the defense for a sec, which we could talk about those, because both the defense is pretty good. And obviously, both teams, you know,
Joey Bosa, baby. Your boy,
yeah.
Bosa.
But can you really, really convince yourself that a third-string sophomore quarterback with a month to prepare and, you know, a little bit of game tape now can beat Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide? I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. I won't believe it. And until it happens, I just can't live with it. So I believe that Alabama's going to win, and I actually think that this miracle season for Urban Meyer and Ohio State ends, and kind of ends badly. I think that they're going to put a whooping on. So Alabama, that's been a little bit inconsistent, but has been turning it on recently. I think that two-headed monster with Yeldon and Henry running the ball, and I think your boy Blake Sims, Mari Cooper, just too much talent, too much poppy, and I think that they win 35, and they just blow them out.
Wow. Well, you said pretty much everything, and we both sort of feel the same way about Bama. I think for me, Lane Kiffin and the job that he's done with Sims has been the most impressive thing for me for Bama. I think Nick Saban has got this team developing and peaking throughout the season at the right time. Henry, Yeldon, Cooper, it's just too much posse. I think what I was surprised about with Ohio State, though, and I think it still was against lesser talent, they actually do have some talented people in terms of Smith and Elliott, their speed. You know, I mean, people forget Elliott got over 1,400 yards, you know, 12 touchdowns. So that's great, but they will miss Barrett. Cardell Jones is good. I think he's ready, but I don't think he's ready for Bama. And I think Bama's defensive line at the end of the day is going to dominate this game. And I think the offensive line, It'll be a fight for 2-3 quarters. But when it comes to that fourth, we'll see how it gets down. And I think Sims will make the right scrambles, you know. And surprisingly, listen, this guy's no bum. For those who don't know, this kid's thrown for over 3,200 yards and 26 touchdowns, Ray. I mean, Sims had a heck of a season.
Like Sims, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Under a lot of scrutiny, too.
Everybody I mean, if we look back, I mean, his stats are probably just as good as McCarron's or any of the other guys they've had in the past, you know, couple of regimes of quarterbacks there. So,
yeah,
gotta give
national championship run. They really haven't had Marcus Mariota type, you know, numbers. It's been a well-rounded run, and they've also had running right. They had Mark Ingram, and they had the kid.
Trent Richardson.
Trent Richardson.
Yeah.
Exactly. So their quarterback play hasn't been yeoman. I mean, it's been solid and haven't made many mistakes.
And this kid, he gets it to the Cooper. He gets it to the tight end. He scrambles for first downs. He's got a little – I hate to say this. You know, it's not a fair comparison. But he has a little Russell Wilson in him because he does move the chains and he makes good decisions. And I think the good decision overall will be that Bama – is just, you know, they're just a little bit bigger, stronger, and faster. Ohio State, though, I think they'll play a little bit tougher than you got it, and I'll take Bama 37-26 over Ohio State.
High-scoring game.
30, yeah, oh, yeah. They're gonna. It's almost going to be like that Iron Bowl. They're going to open it up a little. 37-26. So we both got Bama in the chip. You got him against Oregon, and I got him against the defending champs, Florida State. So it's going to be it's going to be a treat. So let's start breaking down some of these other games on the classic bowl games. One game that jumps out, you know, you talk about with the rankings and stuff right away is well, let's work our way up because we got to talk about our boy David Shaw, and you know, before we get to the big games because that's coming up tomorrow, I believe. But the Maryland Terrapins premiering in the Big Ten, they're in a bowl game, Ray, and they're playing the Stanford Cardinal. How beautiful is that?
You know, as a Terp fan, I know you're excited. I know
young Terps. Come on, man! You got to be hyped up. Listen, they've played well. You know, you got a lot of talent there. It's just a matter of the quarterback doing his thing, the speed, likely on defense. You know, in the special teams and the corner. You know, they got to be able to do it. C.J. Brown, he's been good, and I just. As much as I want to pick my Terps, I just think Stanford is too physical and too big, as we saw when they played against Michigan State and Ohio State this year. And I think Stanford will take care of the Terps. I would say maybe 30 to 23. I'll give her some points.
Yeah, I think that Stanford's underachieved this year. David Shaw would probably say that as well. And frankly, Hogan and Montgomery have underachieved. We expected much more from them on offense. I think you're absolutely right. Stanford's going to win the game. I think there's another added element. If this is being played in Stanford's backyard. This is being played at Levi Stadium. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So this thing, what do they call it? The Foster's Bowl? I don't even know what that is. But the Foster's Farm Bowl or something like that. Anyway, the bottom line is, what's that?
I thought it was Foster's beer.
No, it's not. That would be played in Australia. That'd be Australian rules football. That'd be kind of fun, though.
That'd be kind of fun.
Stanford played Maryland with Australian rules football, and they played in the Foster's Bowl in Sydney. But no, they're playing at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara.
No, it's almost unfair. It's almost unfair.
Yeah, it's almost a home game for Stanford. So I think Stanford ultimately puts it together. I think they give David Shaw an 8-5 season. You know what? Maybe David Shaw. Shh. Don't tell
the
anybody.
Raiders. Or the Niners.
I was going to say the Raiders because David Shaw coached for Al Davis, had great things to say about Al Davis. He had ties to the Niners, too. Maybe he stays in the Bay Area, goes out at 8-5.
I don't think he wants to leave college. And he's already sort of said that, kind of, I guess, publicly or privately leaked it out that he wants to stay. But sometimes you wonder that allure of the NFL, you know? And like
you
said.
Also, I was going to say, you know, the allure of the NFL and the allure to stay home. He loves the Bay Area, and you've got two Bay Area jobs potentially open. So
you
it's
never
not know, like, go be an NFL quarterback in Minnesota, in Jacksonville, in Miami, New York. Go be
I would not count him out. I would not count him out, you know. But come on, let's get to the rest of these games. Let's just go through real quick. Notre Dame against number 23 LSU. I'm actually going to take Notre Dame in this one. I think they want to end on a high season. They've had some up and downs. I think they've got a lot of talent offensively. I have not loved this LSU team. They can run the ball, play some defense, but they're a little bit vulnerable, and Notre Dame's explosive. So I'm going to take Notre Dame, actually, 31-24 over LSU.
So I like this LSU team. I think that they are a little underachieving, but quiet as kept. They're 8-4. They play good D. I think they'll be able to hold Notre Dame to 20, and they'll win 23-20 in Nashville.
Wow. Okay, now we got Georgia at 13 up against number 21, Louisville. This one is interesting. Todd Gurley's going pro. Louisville's underrated, but I think the Georgia Bulldogs are going to be too much. I think this one, not ugly, but they're going to be physical and show the SEC kind of strong over the ACC here. I'll say 34-21.
I think an SEC 9-3 is different from an ACC 9-3. And Georgia quiet as kept with 6-2 in the conference. That's with Gurley going down. So I think too much popping on Georgia's side. I believe that they are just too strong, and they will put it on Louisville. I think they win 30-17.
Now, this is one of my favorite games. Cannot miss this. When you're talking about TCU against Ole Miss, number 5 against number 9, and the Chick-fil-A Bowl. That's two amazing teams, 9-3, 11-1. But my problem is this: I think TCU's defense has been disrespected and underrated. Maybe their team feels disrespected. Bo Wallace has, you know, faded a little bit towards the end. I like Ole Miss's defense, but you know what? Your boy Trevon Boykin, 4th in the Heisman voting, he is going to go off. And I think TCU, with their speedsters and Green in the backfield, they open up a can, Ray, and they put it on Ole Miss 37-24.
So listen to this. That's the sound of the air going out of Ole Miss. Once they lost that first game, I felt like their season was done in terms of, you know, they had people were whispering national championship in their ear, and then they ended up losing, and then they lost to Mississippi State, and then lost to Alabama. And I just think there's just that negative energy, and they never really recovered. So I agree, TCU and our boy who needs to get more national love, the junior out of Dallas, is the real deal in college. See the numbers he put up? 3,700 yards, 30 touchdowns, only 7 interceptions. And he's just, they're an offensive machine.
And he's got a great arm. He's got a great arm. He's a real quarterback.
Yeah. Right, and Green and Doctson around him, and he himself runs. You know what? And this game is going to be played indoors in Georgia. So you would think that the seedy turf there, I like TCU. I like TCU in this game pretty big. I'm picking a lot of blowouts. I think they'll win 31-20.
Okay, now we got the Vizio Fiesta Bowl. This might not be fair It's out here in Glendale, Arizona, number 20, hosting number 10, hosting number 20, Boise State. Now, Boise State, they, you know, had a good season, 11-2. We all know, you know, Arizona's big wins, but they're, you know, that rough loss in the Pac-12 title to Oregon, no shame in that because they split with them. I think Rich Rodriguez gets these guys going back. I think Arizona and their quarterback, Solomon, who I like. I like Jones on the outside. They can run the ball. I think Arizona's defense is going to show up in this one. Now, Boise State, they can do some things, but I just think it's going to be too much playing out in Arizona in the backyard. That's like a total home game. So I'll take the Wildcats of Arizona. And, wow, they're going to be ranked a top 10 team at the end of this season, Ray. The Pac-12, let me tell you, the Pac-12 is coming back real strong next year. Because USC is all freshmen and sophomores and Cody Kessler. So Arizona wins, I'll say 30-22.
Yeah, I think that you give Solomon, Wilson, and Jones basically a home game. Boise's got to come down. They probably don't travel as well as those big state schools, those big Pac-12 schools, and perfect weather out there. Arizona just puts it on Boise State, another one of these blowouts. I think Boise State scores 18. I think an off score, and Arizona puts up 30.
Now, we got the Capital One Orange Bowl with a very good and fascinating matchup. Georgia Tech, number 12, very strong team against number 7, Mississippi State. Ray, I'll just keep it simple. We got a couple more to pick. It's Prescott, and I think he wants redemption. I like Robinson. I like Wilson. I love what Georgia Tech does, and people think it's hard to prepare for, and yes, it is. I think Mississippi State has had the time, though, and you know Thomas left, Thomas right. They're strong, but I think Mississippi State's defense really is going to show themselves. I think this team's underrated, and they're going to finish in the top 5 in the rankings. Mississippi State wins this game, not so high scoring. I say they win 26-20 over Georgia Tech.
I agree with the outcome. I don't even think it's going to be that high scoring. I think that Thomas is the key to Georgia Tech. But like you said, Mississippi State got a very good defense, and they've got a month to prepare, and they've got a lot of film on Justin Thomas, right? So they're able to contain him. I think they do just enough to win. I think they win a close game, 20-17, Mississippi State win.
Ah. Now, we do have, a couple of the New Year's Six? I think we still got some of those games. And who sets that off? Is it Auburn?
New Year's Day, the first game, yeah, is Auburn, and then right after that is Michigan State and Baylor. So
all right. So
Auburn, Wisconsin. So you got
Auburn,
the
Wisconsin
Bowl at noon.
Wow. 19 against 18. Honestly, you know what? I think I'm going to go. Auburn is, they haven't impressed me enough this season. I'm going to go with Wisconsin in an upset because I just think Melvin Gordon, he'll be able to pound and eventually break through and run on the Tigers. So I'll take Wisconsin. 28-27. Close game.
I don't think Wisconsin is explosive enough. I think you have to make some big plays to beat Auburn. I don't think you can pound Gordon on an SEC defense like that. And I think that Nick Marshall, we forgot about him a little bit. A little bit of a disappointing season, but between Nick Marshall and their running back Cameron Artis Payne, these guys can move the ball and they'll be able to put up some points. So I think Auburn outscored Alabama 27-23.
Well, we got the Cotton Bowl, Ray, and this one is going to be fun because it's number 8 Michigan State against number 5 Baylor. This might be one of the best games of the whole bowl season. Nice defense against offense. Your boy Bryce Petty. You know what Cook brings for Michigan State. I think Langford and Michigan State, they want to show everybody that the Big Ten didn't just have one good team, and I think this is the way for them to show it. I think Michigan State slows down Baylor, and they actually win a real close one. I'll say 27-26, Michigan State. Spartans.
You know, Bryce said he was my guy, and I thought he won the national championship. I also thought Michigan State would be playing in that Final Four, but they got beat up pretty badly by Oregon in week one. They lost again to Ohio State, so that those two losses, they couldn't come back from them. Yeah. But
those both those teams in the Final Four.
Yeah, I still think that their defense, with the combination of Cook and Langford and Lippitt, their offense is pretty good. Now, granted, Petty, Linwood, and Coleman are quite an offensive juggernaut themselves, but I think that this Michigan State defense will show up, and they'll contain Petty, and they'll hold him to 23, and they'll score 27. So in a close game, Michigan State 27-23.
All right. The last one, number 25, Minnesota against Missouri, number 16.
Missouri.
In the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl. This used to be the Citrus Bowl when we were growing up, Ray. Now you got the Buffalo Wild Wings with your citrus. So maybe you take some of the orange. You want to put your orange on your wings? Oh, man. Listen,
orange daiquiri.
Listen, you can't be mad at that. But you know what? I'm a believer because you told me to be a believer in your boy, Matty Mock. And he's shown up most weeks. Could have done a little bit more. But, you know, had a respectable season. And I think Missouri's defense is a little underrated. And I think they want to get some props back, some respect. And I think the way to do it is against a team that had sort of bounced in and out of the top 25 that, you know, was getting a little bit of love in the Big Ten and getting some conversation in terms of, you know, who TCU beat, Minnesota, is that a quality win? And Cobb is legit, you know, 1,500 yards. But you know what? Missouri's not having it. They're going to rep the SEC strong. And Missouri is going to put it on Minnesota 34-21.
Amen, brother. I believe everything you said. Matty Mock's a sophomore, so I'm looking for big things for him next year. I just don't think that Minnesota is explosive enough on offense, and Missouri is going to put up points. I think that it'll be close in the first half. Missouri pulls away in the second half. So I like Missouri to win 30-20. Make it nice round numbers for you. In the Florida Citrus Bowl in Orlando.
Oh, man. Listen, I think and if you had to pick out of all these games, right, obviously the playoffs is a must-see TV. Everybody's had a great season with college football. You know, on our show, we've had a lot of fun with college football, and, you know, we talk it on Twitter with everybody. But if just separate from the college playoff, and when we come back, obviously after the New Year's, you know, before the 12th, we'll predict the championship game. One game out of the, you know, the major ones we mentioned, not just, you know, the Monday, the rest of the bowl game is remaining. One game that is, if you're a college football fan, you have to see. What's the game that Ray is sitting down and like, I got to watch this?
I want to see Ole Miss and TCU because all the other teams got the hype. These two teams could have been in the Final Four. They were a little bit short. But Wallace and Boykin, I want to see these two quarterbacks battle it out. You know, together they've thrown for almost 8,000 yards. Almost 7,000 yards. And I think they both had, quietly speaking, really good season. And I look for a nice, you know, under-the-radar screen game. So that's the under-the-radar screen game. And obviously the one that intrigues me, you know, in terms of the high-profile game is 2-3, just a total difference of style, Florida State, Oregon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's going to be a classic. You know, I'd have to agree with you on that game. But just to pick something a little bit different. I'm fascinated to – I was going to say Georgia Tech and Mississippi State because I love that Mississippi State team, but I think that they can handle them. So I would have to say Michigan State-Baylor. And because there's on both teams some guys that potentially could play in the NFL on Sundays, and I want to see if they're real. And when we talk about quarterbacks, I actually think that this guy Cook, Connor Cook, is sneaky good, and I want to see if potentially he could be an NFL quarterback or if Langford could play in the next level or, you know, even Longwood or Petty, you know, I mean Linwood or Petty. So there's a lot of talent on both teams, and you kind of love to see the, you know, the big offense, and you got the Big 12 who, you know, felt like they got shafted from the Big 10 with Ohio State. So this is a big statement for Baylor who's in that conversation with TCU, and obviously they were just left out at number five. They want to do what Ohio State did to Michigan State, you know what I mean? So this game right here is crucial at 12:30, you know, to watch the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Day against Michigan State. So Baylor, Michigan State, I got to see that. Got to see
that. All right. Well, hey, great show. I want to wish you, Tay, and your family a happy new year. Wish our audience a happy new year. Enjoy your sports. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy your family. If you're going to drink, drink and drive. Don't drink and drive. Be safe.
That's right.
Give yourself a happy new year, and we'll catch you on Friday in the new year.
Oh, my gosh.
2015.
We didn't even dream about this when we was, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s, 2015. I mean, goodness gracious, Ray. Hey, real quick, if we had to pick one either sports story or athlete of the year that, I guess, impressed you or blew you away the most, who would it be? Because for me, it's the guy in San Francisco. What Madison Bumgarner did, I think, was the most impressive thing I've seen all season in that World Series and his playoff run. That, for me, was 2014 right there in a nutshell.
Wow. You know what? That's a great one, and I'd have to agree. He's the guy that single-handedly carried his team to a championship. I mean, in all the other sports I can think of, it was more of a team. It was more a bunch of guys, but Madison Bumgarner is the guy. The one thing that stood out for me 2014, maybe it's not the outstanding performance, but it's right. The NFL cracking down on Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson, two of their biggest stars and two
wow.
of the glory, you know, players. Now, granted, quarterback is the glory position, but
right.
two players. Now, granted, there's other people, Hardy and McDonald and
yeah.
you know, Alden Smith, but those two guys basically being suspended for the whole season. I thought that was the story to me of 2014, if it's not Madison Bumgarner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it's more negative, but
right.
it was such a huge story because it was so shocking. And in the NFL, we've never really seen such names be taken out of the game or off the field. So definitely, I have to agree. That would definitely have to be off the field, like our segment off the field. But Bumgarner on the field, he's the man. So great show, Ray. I'll see you in 2015. Ray and Tay Today doing big things. Look out for us. Check out rayandtaytoday.com. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter. And like always, we love talking sports with friends. Have a happy new year. Be safe.
We're out.